now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the game World Cup Daily from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer and thank you for joining us. We are here every match day of the World Cup, podcasting after 10 o'clock UK time every night. In the studio with me, he is the stat man, Bill Edgar. Matt Dickinson is on the line from St. Petersburg. Hello, Matt.
Evening.
Hello. Later on, we're going to be joined by Alison Rudd for a reaction on France's victory that saw them through to the last 16 and sent the Peruvians home. Shortly, we'll be talking about some England team news ahead of their meeting with Panama on Sunday. But we have to start with Croatia joining France in the knockout stages, while Argentina stare elimination in the face. Yes, Argentina's hopes of progressing in Russia are hanging in the balance after a 3-0. Yes, that's 3-0 loss to Croatia. Matt's a heavy scoreline against Argentina, who just looks so very ordinary this evening.
Yeah, well, I think even worse than ordinary, just ragged. I mean, defensively shambolic at times. They just look like incredibly disjointed. No one looked happy with the system. The first game against Iceland, there was a sort of give it to Messi and hope. And this game, well, they barely even managed that in the second half. I guess we shouldn't be so shocked. I mean, they did scrape qualification. The sort of over-reliance on Messi has been sort of discussed coming into this tournament. It's not as if this hadn't been a sort of trouble brewing, but I still think, even taking that into account, the scale of the sort of shambles is still pretty startling.
Yeah, you mentioned how disjointed they were. I mean, they just simply didn't seem to have a plan and were error-strewn throughout that match.
Well, I think there's been a lot of talk, and it's made sense looking at this game that Sampaoli, he's known for as a superb coach with and carved his name particularly with that Chile team. But he has a strategy which just didn't suit the players, and they seem to be just caught between so many different sort of styles and hopes and tactics. I thought Zabaleta made some good points watching the game about the wing backs are actually wingers and they just looked completely uncomfortable as soon as they were in retreat. I think that he wanted, generally he's associated with a sort of hard, fast pressing game, and they just simply didn't have the players for that. Then you saw the change. I mean, they go one down and Aguero comes straight off. I mean, Higuain is no slouch when it comes to goal scoring, but that just struck me as an odd move. There's a lack of coherence about the whole thing.
Bill, the main stars of Lionel Messi, Sergio Aguero, they seem to be so largely anonymous out there in Nizhny.
The second half was extraordinary. Argentina would lose the ball and there would be no... The Argentina wouldn't suddenly kind of get back into any sort of shape. There was no shape to them, and there were just vast open spaces in the centre of the pitch that Modric and Rakitic were lolloping through, completely unchecked. Absolutely extraordinary. And when Argentina did go forward, a player would say head up the wing, and there'd be no running off the ball to support him. It was just absolutely shambolic. I think this will go down for Argentina as the equivalent of the Iceland defeat for England in 2016.
It's as bad as that, do you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
And Matt, I know you've kind of already alluded to Lionel Messi and the fact that Argentina just don't have the creative players to help bring out his magic.
Well, they certainly should do. I mean, their forward line is the envy of well, you know, in terms of just pure quality, should be the envy of pretty much everyone, maybe apart from Brazil. But you know, he's looked out of sorts because clearly there's a sort of lack of belief in he's had a lack of belief in the system. I mean, I thought in terms of body language, pretty much from the start, I think even from the sort of lineup of the players, you just looked at him and he didn't look like a guy who was thinking, right, this is where we turn it around.
Yeah, he looked like he kind of had the weight of the nation on his shoulders, didn't he?
Well, absolutely. You can understand how he feels it. And I think, you know, obviously if you've got a thriving system, then that helps to release the burden. I know obviously Brazil have gone to huge lengths to try and release that sort of pressure on Neymar. I mean, Portugal rely colossally on Ronaldo, but the others seem to sort of, you know, have a functional jobs that they get about, enabling him to do his bit and bring out the best of him. And there's a sort of mutual understanding there, shall we say, with Messi, that just doesn't seem to exist. And it's on the one hand shocking, on the other, you know, this has not been a team that's been functioning for quite some time.
For all this talk of how bad Argentina were, Bill, how good were Croatia?
Yeah, they're very good. I mean, they're perfectly placed to take advantage of any big team that's going to slip up. I remember in thinking back to 1998, they beat Germany 3-0. Germany were kind of on the wane and they capitalised, and it was very similar tonight. They just did what they needed to do. I mean, it was obviously they've got Modric and Rakitic in the centre of midfield. They both scored. It was a fantastic goal from Modric. So yeah, and that they've now scored 5 goals without conceding in the World Cup so far. So after beating Nigeria 2-0 as well, they're through with a game to spare. They can rest players. So it's all looking rosy for them.
But Matt, obviously they scored 3 goals, but we have to speak about that first goal and that howler from Willy Caballero. I mean, that is one that he will not forget for a very, very long time.
Absolutely. And I mean, I guess, you know, he hasn't played the games that he would have hoped to this season. But even so, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's absolute clanger. On the other hand, it's still a hell of a bloody volley. The ball is teed up, but the connection is just fantastic. So a clanger beautifully capitalised on. But that really just set the tone for the whole Argentinian night, really.
Well, we caught up earlier with Oliver Kay in the Nizhny Novgorod Stadium, who witnessed that incredible collapse by Argentina.
I just look at that Argentina team and I don't even know what it's meant to be. Complete change of system. 3 changes in personnel, but total change of system. Sampaoli has been a wonderful coach in many of the previous jobs he's done, but he just doesn't seem to know what he's doing in this job. And that is strange with such a good coach. But it was interesting that in the post-match press conference, the first question he was asked was about the choice of goalkeeper. It wasn't about Messi. It was about the choice of Caballero. And Roger said to him, why did you pick Caballero? Why didn't you wait before naming the squad for Sergio Romero to prove his fitness? And I think that's a big problem. It was a terrible mistake for a goalkeeper who also looked erratic on Saturday against Iceland. But it's the whole team. The defence was a mess. The midfield was just totally second rate, really, reliant on an ageing Mascherano. And Messi barely seemed to have the ball, and when he did, there was nothing moving around him. He didn't seem to be in the mood. We all saw him in the pre-match with Moel. He didn't look right, really, did he? He seemed to be agitated. He didn't seem calm. He didn't seem serene. It looks to me like he's feeling that burden incredibly heavily on his shoulders, and it's getting him down. And somehow he needs to perform on Tuesday against Nigeria. Somehow he needs to get Argentina the win they desperately need. But even that might not be enough. It just went from bad to worse for Argentina. I thought it was a shambolic performance. And they were punished by an extremely good Croatia team who I think should be taken very seriously.
The Game. World Cup Daily from The Times with Natalie Sawyer.
You can hear live commentary of all of Friday's games on TalkSport, including Brazil taking on Costa Rica at 1 o'clock, Nigeria versus Iceland at 4, and the clash between Serbia and Switzerland live from 7 o'clock on TalkSport. Okay, Matt, let's talk about a story that has broken from the England camp earlier on. The assistant manager, Steve Holland, was photographed with a sheet of paper in his hand that seemed to indicate the team for Panama on Sunday.
Well, it certainly gave us interesting clues. I mean, I think clearly there's a few days of training to go. You know, Gareth Southgate could change his mind. But it basically came out with a sheet which had a sort of obvious A team and an obvious B team written underneath it, and that indicated that Loftus-Cheek would come in for Ali, which I guess we would assume would be the obvious like-for-like change if Ali is, as we suspect, not fit for the game or not to be risked for the game. Mm-hmm. And I guess more intriguingly, Rashford ahead of Sterling in support of Kane, which I had actually thought was a good idea coming off the Tunisia match. I think Sterling's movement has been good. I think he contributed to that really bright opening. But the fact is, we do still need some goal power aside from Harry Kane. And I would like to see Rashford given a run. It's against Panama. We can expect to dominate possession. We expect to dominate territory. I think we'll certainly get more shots off with Rashford up front. I think his form looks decent. His confidence looks high. I'm told in training he's been sharp. We saw that goal in warm-up against Costa Rica. So we're not sure it's definite yet, but there is a pattern with Gareth Southgate that he wants the players to know and understand the team quite early. I think he feels just with a young group, and especially on this World Cup stage, that he just wants people to sort of feel secure. It's different managers have had different styles. Capello sometimes wouldn't even tell the players till a couple of hours before kickoff. But Gareth Southgate has sought to do things a little differently. So if that is the case, it's an interesting tweak to the team, but one I actually do understand and buy into.
The Tunisia game perhaps wasn't the best for Raheem Sterling. Do you think another reason why he may well be dropped is his poor goal return? He hasn't scored, in 21 games now for England?
Well, I mean, that statistic is, there's no escaping it. I mean, I think he's played some good games for England. I think he contributed certainly to the bright opening, but, he also contributed that sort of very clunky miss where he seemed to potentially, I think, sort of freeze a bit. He wasn't sure which foot to go with. I think it is a sign that he doesn't get the chances that he does with England as he does with Manchester City. I think he probably feels a bit inhibited playing with England because of that. I also think there's a slight sort of reluctance to pull the trigger with England that we've seen. I saw that in the Nigeria warm-up game where he had two or three chances. And again, he played well, but he couldn't get the shots off. And for those reasons, particularly against a team like Panama, when, say, England will be looking for goals, I think that does add up to a certain logic to give Rashford a run.
Bill, are you a fan of Rashford?
Yes, I'm a big fan of Rashford. I agree with Matt. I would probably stick him in ahead of Sterling, although, of course, it will necessitate a slight change of style. Sterling's part of the attacking midfield group of players who've impressed a lot with a short interpassing, whereas with Rashford he'll be more of a direct runner. But I think the problem of goal scoring has been going on a long time at tournaments. It's overlooked at Euro 2016, given the disaster against Iceland in the first knockout round, that England actually played really well in all three group matches and just missed an absolute stack of chances. It started again against Tunisia this time. They've got to sort it out, that they're creating plenty. And of course, Rashford offers a bit more hope than Sterling, I guess, in terms of finishing off, because obviously Kane is brilliant, but they need somebody else to do the finishing. Having said that, Rashford's only scored 3 in 19 appearances for England.
So we're expecting Rashford to come, and we're also expecting Loftus-Cheek to replace the injured Dele Alli. And it seems as though Alli is in fine spirits still, as on his Instagram story, you can see what's partly keeping the England camp amused. It is a book of the Times crossword. They've got good taste, those England boys. Matt, you're going to be off to Brazil, Costa Rica Friday afternoon in St. Petersburg. So you're going to get to see the third member of the big three in world football, Neymar, who, providing he plays after his ankle issue in training, will no doubt be looking to lead his side to what will be an important victory.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, they were my pre-tournament tips. So I'm obviously that's the most important issue for me is making sure my fiver is well placed. But no, I think, you know, there are high hopes for Brazil, you know, in terms of, you know, potential to go all the way. And obviously, given what happened 4 years ago, to atone and avenge for that nightmare on their own soil. I think, you know, as we're going back to the Argentina discussion, Tite, the coach, has done a one of the biggest challenges he had was actually weaning them off a Neymar dependence, because I think they felt that the pressure was too great on him. And obviously, if he was missing games, you know, then suddenly psychologically that would become an issue. And, you know, players like Coutinho scored that fantastic goal. Firmino, Gabriel Jesus, you know, they're not exactly lacking in firepower. But I think, like a lot of big teams, they started a little slowly. Well-organized teams have managed to make it hard work for some of these favorites. And that's been part of the joy, early joy of the tournament.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host Luke Jones for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
France are through to the last 16 after beating Peru 1-0, and as a result, the South American side have been eliminated. Alison Rudd joins us now. And Alison, you were with the French camp earlier in this tournament. You saw their performance against Australia. So how different, if at all, were they this time around?
It was different. They haven't solved all their problems. I would argue nobody would want to meet France in the knockout stages. There's this thing at the World Cup where some teams tend to start in a confused manner and they look like they're in slight disarray, but they grow with the tournament. And if you've got the basis of the amount of flair players that France have got, you've got to say that's starting at a low base, but you know they're going to grow. And I think in a sense you could say the best teams don't do their best stuff at the start of a tournament anyway. You grow into it. You learn, as they did against Australia were the better team. I gave the star man to Trent Sainsbury, even though Australia lost that game, and very few people have probably heard of him, really, other than the fact it's a great name to have in your sticker album. But they've learned from that. Their presser after the Australia game, you'd think you'd landed in a room where France had lost, not got 3 points. Didier Deschamps admitted things needed to be better. The players spoke out and said they were not all on the same page. They were playing different matches, different tactics. They weren't a group together. These are dreadful things to be saying when you're already at the World Cup. These are things you should iron out earlier. So it was really interesting to me to see how they would cope against Peru. And Deschamps made changes that were necessary, and he started with Olivier Giroud. You might say it's obvious. I would say not necessarily obvious, but it was a masterstroke. He gave France a focal point. There'd been concern amongst the strikers that they were all bumping into each other, and having sort of three bustling around just didn't work. So dropping Dembele and bringing in Giroud just made him the focal point, as I say. He held the ball up well. He's so good in the air. He made quite a few lovely sort of cushioned headers. He brought the scampering players into play. So there was more balance in the team in that sense. I think France, while they've not nowhere near hit the heights that they can, given the personnel they have, they were much better than they were against Australia. And the fact that there is room for improvement, I think, means that while tonight, you know, people are gushing about Croatia, I think people should fear France.
Yeah, it's two wins out of two now for France. And if they were to win the group, Alison, they'll face the second team from Group D. And I know already we've spoken about Argentina and how they're pretty average at the moment, but that could well end up being Argentina.
No, it's going to be Croatia and Iceland in that group. I can't do it. Iceland are going to beat Nigeria.
You're waving the Iceland flag again, aren't you?
I'm not going to stop now after that. Regardless of whether it is, actually, it makes a huge difference to France whether it's Iceland or Argentina, I should imagine. But they have to solve a few extra things regardless who their opponents are, because I think Griezmann's a worry. It's the second game on the trot. He's come off in the second half, not to rest him, but because he was fading. And it's like mystery why it's not quite gelling for him. He starts brightly and then just seems to get disappointed with himself more than anything. But I just want to go out on a limb and say I think it will be Iceland is finished second in Group D.
Alison, keeping the Iceland thunderclap going. Rudd, thank you very much.
The Game, World Cup Daily from The Times with Natalie Sawyer.
Every day we've been asking you a Times trivia teaser as provided by Bill Edgar, who is sat opposite me. And last time out we asked, who is the only player to have scored a higher number of goals than his shirt number at a World Cup? I really struggled with this one, Bill. So what is the answer?
The answer is the great Hungarian Sandor Kocsis, who in 1954 scored 11 goals while wearing the number 8 shirt. So three more goals than his shirt number.
OK, but hang on a second, because a lot of people have suggested it was Jules Fontaine, who'd scored 13 goals for France in 1958. So why is it not him?
Well, you might have thought so, given the propensity to wear shirt numbers 1 to 11 more often then, but no, he was actually wearing number 17, so he got 13, but he was still four short of that number.
Oh, curses. You've done it again, Bill. It's a good one. Thank you very much for that. Bill's teaser for today's podcast: which Italian defender missed the finals of both the Champions League and World Cup in 1994 because of suspension? Tune in to our next podcast to find out the answer. Serbia take on Switzerland on Friday night in Kaliningrad. Perhaps not the sexiest fixture on paper, but there is quite the political backdrop to this match. Alan Smith has written about this for The Times and joins us now. Alan, good to hear from you. The issue here has to do with relations, doesn't it, between Serbia and Kosovo and the trio of Swiss players with Kosovan roots.
Yeah, so it dates back really until back as far as the day the draw for the finals was made, when Jerdin Shaqiri, Swiss midfielder who was actually born in Kosovo, emigrated to Switzerland as an infant, put a post on Instagram saying, I like this draw, which was taken quite seriously as a provocation in Serbia. Obviously, Serbians don't recognise Kosovo as an independent state. They believe it's a territory which should technically belong to them. It's quite a complex case, and Serbian media have been building this up all week as being, you know, we're going to be provoked by these three Swiss players. Another added layer to it is that last week Alexander Mitrovic, the Newcastle striker, who obviously Serbia forward, sort of questioned why Shaqiri refused to switch allegiance towards Kosovo 2 years ago. So among all of that, it's sort of the build-up has been quite one-sided, and that in Serbia they're saying we're going to be provoked, whereas in Switzerland very little has been made of it all.
Yeah, so it's Jerdin Shaqiri and also Granit Xhaka and Valon Barami who are the three players concerned.
Yeah, Barami and Xhaka, both of their parents had been persecuted while living in Kosovo. Both actually born in Switzerland after their parents had moved there. Both quite close like connected in Kosovo. They tweet in Albanian. They speak to each other's family. They speak to their families in Albanian. Very much identify themselves as being Kosovan and Swiss, which again has sort of whipped up this frenzy in Serbia, where certain tabloids have said, "Tomorrow we're playing Kosovo. It's just under a Swiss flag, even though it's only going to be three of the players." Again, very much it's a case of in Serbia it's being treated as quite a big rivalry, whereas Switzerland, not much has been made of it, apart from the three players who obviously are going to have possibly an added incentive when they go into the game tomorrow night.
You've mentioned how Shaqiria made that post on social media. He also, on his boots, has what, the Swiss flag on one, the Kosovan flag on the other. So do you feel he could be potentially targeted more than anybody else when Switzerland take on Serbia?
Well, the interesting thing is that he's actually had the Kosovan flag on his right boot for a number of years. 4 years ago, when Switzerland played in the World Cup, it was there. He also had the Albanian flag on his boots for a while, but that has now disappeared. The Serbian team, from what they've been saying in the build-up to the game, is that they feel like they're the ones that are being provoked rather than what everyone else would imagine Serbians targeting Shaqiri for having the flag on his boots. So it's been spun in sort of the opposite way that anybody who reads the story in tomorrow's paper will imagine it to be.
Well, Alan, you're going to be joining us on a Friday night where we're going to be reacting and looking out for any incident in that Switzerland-Serbia match. So thank you for now.
Thank you very much.
Denmark and Australia played out a 1-1 draw, but it was a game marred by controversy after a VAR penalty was given to the Socceroos. So let's get straight to that penalty talking point. Play briefly continued before the referee consulted with VAR. In the end, it was decided that Yusuf Poulsen did handle the ball and Mile Jednak then scored the spot kick for Australia. So, Bill, what did you make of it all?
Looking at the incident alone, I think it would usually be given as a penalty because Poulsen had his hand far enough away from his body to be in an unnatural position, as they say. It wasn't next to his body, wasn't close to his body. It wasn't a deliberate handball because the ball came at him too quickly. But as I say, I would give a penalty. Now, the referee didn't give a penalty, and for the VAR people, they would have to recommend to the referee that he looks at it again if they think it was a clear and obvious mistake. So I guess something like 9 out of 10 referees would give it as a penalty, or 19 out of 20 or something. That's a bit of a stretch, I would say. I would be slightly surprised they were so sure that they would gave it that definition as a clear and obvious mistake. Though I would say usually it would be given if the referee could see it, though. Often with handballs, much more than other offences in the penalty area, they're not given because it's harder to see, I think. Ultimately, I think the decision was right, but the way it got there, I wasn't quite sure about.
I mean, this is the beauty of VAR. It sparked such a huge debate. Even ITV's panel of Eni Aluko and Slaven Bilic disagreed with Martin O'Neill over it. The Republic of Ireland manager very much believing it wasn't a penalty and that it was a harsh decision. Mark Clattenburg even said it wasn't a penalty as well. And for what it's worth, I also thought it wasn't a penalty because I don't think Poulsen could do much about it. But this just goes to highlight that these judgments are just about one person's opinion, and confusion still reigns over all of this.
It does, yes. I've been wondering if, given that a clear and obvious mistake, the definition must be something like 19 out of 20 referees would give it as a penalty. For the World Cup, let's just wheel in 20 referees or 10 or something. And if 9 or 10 press the yes button for the penalty, say, OK, it is a penalty, rather than have this team of three VARs all thinking now, would most referees or would 9 out of 10 give it? Just get 10 referees in and press a button.
I do like the idea of the buzzer, kind of like Britain's Got Talent meets the World Cup. Could be quite intriguing if they'd have a golden buzzer as well. Mm. The result means Denmark need a point in their final Group C match against France to be certain of reaching the knockout stage, while Australia can still qualify but must beat Peru to have any hope of extending their stay in Russia. Looking ahead to Friday, Bill, well, we've already spoken about Brazil against Costa Rica and Serbia versus Switzerland. The other fixture is Nigeria versus Iceland in Group D at 4 o'clock. Nigeria know if they lose, they are out, and they'll be taking on the hard-working Icelandics, who of course shot the world with their draw against Argentina.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, and we all like to look at statistics that underlines how small a place Iceland is. Well, given that Nigeria's population is rising by 5 million a year, it's nearly 200 million, Nigeria's population will rise by the equivalent of Iceland's population in the space of 26 days, so less than the course of the World Cup. Nigeria will create its own Iceland in 26 days. So that's the size of the task facing Iceland in one sense. But you would certainly think they've got a decent chance given how well they did against Argentina. They certainly maximise what they've got. A lot has been said about how Iceland's improvement has come over the last 15 years, and they built so many indoor pitches. Looking back over the players who were with Iceland, say 15 years ago, there were more players in the Premier League at the time. You had the likes of Gudni Bergsson at Bolton and once of Tottenham, Ida Gudjonsson at Chelsea, Herman Eriðarsson at Wimbledon. This is all around the year 2000. Heidi Helgason at Watford, Arne Gudlaugsson, Bolton and Leicester, a whole crowd of them, probably almost more individual talent, you'd say, than now. So I think that what really stands out, how well they've done here and also at Euro 2016 and qualifying for both tournaments, is just the tactical setup. That's what's got them this far. Plus a little bit of luck, of course, along the way.
I tell you, he'll be wearing the Icelandic face paint on Friday, Alison Rudd. That's it for now. Many thanks to my guests today, Bill Edgar, Alan Smith, Alison Rudd and Matt Dickinson. Subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. For a limited time only, it is just £1 a month for your first 3 months. Search The Times Sale for more information. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast supplier. We'll be back on Friday as Brazil search for their first victory of this World Cup. See you then.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.